Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, April 21st, 2026. As always, we begin with today's top stories. The first headline reads, it's actually a large photo, front and center of today's paper. The headline reads, 2026 Christie Clinic Illinois Marathon. Oz of Prevention. And there's a photograph of a woman, and she is, looks like she's putting out flyers and setting up for the marathon. Let's read the caption. Lynn, L-Y-N-N, Chaney, C-H-A-N-E-Y, Community Engagement Director for the Christie Clinic Illinois Marathon, sorts and distributes medical equipment into 8 portable kits to be distributed throughout Champaign-Urbana and Savoy for the weekend races while at Human Kinetics on Monday morning. For the last 13 years, Chaney has helped out on many marathon teams, including media relations, medical, course, stadium, and entertainment. In the past, she ran the 5K in order to better understand what participants would need. If I'm asking people to participate and get engaged, I need to know what that feels like. And so that inspired me to take on more things, she said. I see all the moving pieces with the race and see how cool it is, not just for the runners, but the families and friends. And inside, injured athlete plans to give his all in half marathon. That will be a Jody Heckel, former writer for the News Gazette, story. And we'll read that in just a few minutes. Next up, the next headline reads, Danville Area Community College, or DAC is the acronym, state investigating alleged adult ed fraud, funding test scores, the focus. This article is written by Jennifer Bailey and is based out of Danville. Jennifer can be reached at jbaileywy@newsgazette.com, that email address. Following an employment hearing last week involving two administrators, Danville Area Community College, or DAC, on Monday announced the state is investigating potential misappropriation of funds in its adult education department. According to college officials, in October 2025, DAC discovered a suspected coordinated system of misappropriation of adult education funds and falsification of test scores and grant performance reports in the DAC Adult Education Department from calendar years, multiple years, 2022 to 2025. President Randall Fletcher, along with the college's executive leadership team, conducted a six-month internal investigation into the suspected incidents of malfeasance by administrators who supervised this academic program and managed the grant funds. When the executive team discovered these alleged acts of fraud and theft, both the DAC Board of Trustees and the coordinating body of the Illinois Community College System, the Illinois Community College Board, ICCB, were immediately notified. The college said that ICCB Executive Director Brian Durham notified Fletcher last week that the state will conduct an on-site, comprehensive monitoring visit and investigation that would begin immediately. DAC officials said the college will continue to cooperate with the ICCB and state. A DAC employment hearing last week drew community support for Carl Bridges, who had been provost and vice president of academic affairs, student services, and had his position changed to assistant to the president for special projects, and Terry Goodwin, who has been DAC's Dean of Adult Education, Literacy, and Middle College, College Express. Bridges said the hearing was an opportunity to present our side of the situation, to hopefully get the board to understand our commitment to this institution and that we are men of integrity. Goodwin declined to comment. No board action was taken after the meeting. Next up, severe weather. Friday storms ravage Loda Farm. This article is written by Luke Taylor. Luke can be reached at his email address, LTAYLOR, at newsgazette.com. This article is based out of LODA. Storms that swept across Illinois on Friday night left widespread damage in their wake, and the Niewold Farm, N-I-E-W-O-L-D, farm of rural LODA certainly saw that impact. For a farm facility that's been here for bazillions of years and bins that have been here for a long time, the landscape and the skyline in this part of Ford County has changed dramatically, Greg Niewold said. He said that workers were out on the farm when their phones started going off with storm alerts at around 9:45 p.m. Friday night. They went into the grain leg pit, one of the only concrete buildings on the farm, and waited out the weather. After the storms, they found that three sections of irrigation rigs had been flipped over and that the majority of the grain factory had been wiped out. One grain leg is kinked to the point that Niewold said it's sticking about 100 feet up into the sky. That included a 42-foot bin, a 48-foot bin, two 30-foot bins, and a 36-foot bin. They were empty and just crinkled up like an empty soup can, Niewold said. Demolition crews and crane crews were on the farm all day Monday to stabilize the structures for safety, he said. While an actual cost estimate hasn't been made, Niewold figures they're looking at north of $1 million to get the farm back into shape. It's currently planting season, so he's looking at about 4 months until they need to use facilities that no longer exist. If they aren't available by then, the Niewolds will have to entirely change their marketing structure, bringing grain straight to the elevator after harvest, rather than being able to store it in weight of a preferred sale price. There's a lot of bot at play here, besides just some galvanized grain bins, Niewold said. This is by far the worst damage he's experienced out of the farm. Some years back, they had grain legs kinked in strong winds, but this mass destruction, quote-unquote, was all new to Niewold. At the moment, he says everyone is feeling pretty numb at the situation. If he can find a silver lining, it's the fact that he can turn to local businesses to deal with the damage in the short term, as well as building up replacement structures once it's time for that. We're going to make the best of the situation. You don't have any other real choice but to make the best of the situation and move forward, Niewold said. And there's a photograph, and it just looks like some kind of a metal silo that's just been kind of twisted and contorted by the wind. The caption reads, Friday night storms took a toll on structures on the Niewold farm outside of LODA. That photo is provided. Next up, City of Champaign, property registry proposal opposed. Complainants fear the potential loss of privacy, possibly of unjust searches. This article is written by Jana Wiersema, J-W-I-E-R-S-E-M-A, at newsgazette.com, and this article is based out of Champaign. The city's proposal to create a registry of owners of apartments and vacant commercial buildings is facing opposition from an organization whose members represent more than 15,000 rental housing units in Champaign County. Central Illinois Rental Property Professionals, or the CIRPP, is against the measure, which will be voted on at tonight's Champaign City Council meeting. It's our view that this proposed ordinance will lead to decreased housing affordability and increased government expenses, said Andrew Timms, CIRPP's legislative chair. Both of these are concerns affecting all City of Champaign citizens. City staff have proposed requiring owners of rental properties and vacant commercial buildings to provide contact information for both the owner and a local representative who responds to maintenance issues and emergencies on a 24-hour basis. Among other things, CIRPP officials argued that centralizing property owners' contact information could create a massive liability for fraud if that information is exposed. The organization also expressed concern that registration could lead to unjust searches and that the proposal threatens the local supply of affordable housing. The idea of having a local agent is also seen as a burden on rental property owners. Tell me another business that has to have someone available 24 hours to report to the city, Tim said. Additionally, he questioned why, if one of the city's aims is public safety, only rental properties and vacant commercial properties are being singled out. On the other hand, Neighborhood Services Director Rob Kowalski told the News Gazette that having up-to-date contact information would enable the city to reach property owners more quickly if there is an issue, whether it's something minor, like tall grass, or a more serious emergency involving first responders. He also noted that, at present, staff's main source of contact information for property owners is the mailing addresses associated with tax records. This entails mailing a paper letter, which takes many days to receive, may not reach the right person, and ultimately may get returned as undeliverable for unknown reasons, Kowalski said. Additionally, with the rise in the number of corporations owning rental property, it is often difficult to find the actual person responsible for a given property. A registry will allow staff to connect with the right person immediately and notify them of issues much quicker. He added that the city would develop a simple registration portal using its existing OpenGov software with no fee to registrants. However, starting in 2027, a penalty would be assessed for failing to register. Registration information will not be made public, and FOIA redaction protections that currently exist would apply, Kowalski said. He wrote in a report to the City Council that the registration requirement does not trigger automatic inspections of any rental units or vacant buildings. Inspections are still provided primarily through tenant requests or via common area inspections, as currently authorized by city code, Kowalski said. The city previously sought input on the proposal through Engage Champaign. About 50 responses were collected from the site, Kowalski wrote. About half of the comments were in strong support of adopting the programs, he said. These were primarily from community members who expressed frustration with unkept rental property in their neighborhood that do not get addressed in a timely manner. They welcomed the proposal for the city to be able to more quickly communicate with the property owner and address the issues. The other half of the comments expressed either concern with the proposals or had questions about how it would operate. Concerns included that the registration would lead to an inspection program and that fees would eventually be implemented. Additionally, some property owners wish to keep their information private. The next headline reads, top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. Questions, comments, suggestions for this article or this column, you can always reach out to Jim Rosso at his email address, JROSSOW@newsgazette.com. For Callie Turner, Callie Turner, the chance to produce a radio commercial and do live TV was anything but nerve-wracking. I thrive on it, the Muhammad Seymour High Jr. said, because I like talking to people. Turner and 20 other students in Jennifer Wehrle's agriculture class made their annual trip to the News Gazette and WCIA on Monday to promote the MS Ag Supply Store and Greenhouse ahead of a community plant sale that starts May 1st. Proceeds of the student-run event fund scholarships and help set the following school year's budget. You'll hear their impressive work on WDWS 1400 AM, 93.9 FM, WHMS 97.5 FM, and WKIO 105.5 FM beginning April 29th. Turner also took over our Snapchat account during the day-long adventure. Wehrle introduced the innovative approach more than 20 years ago to give the students a behind-the-scenes look at how things are done in TV and radio and newspaper, she said. The students enjoy the opportunity to talk about what they've been doing all year. And there's a couple of photographs that accompany this short article. They're both taken by Jim Rosso of the News Gazette. One is a group of students, all kind of smiling, blue shirts, in the newsroom, group shot, smiling for the camera. And then there's another photograph of people kind of at doing a news radio show, talk show, with microphones, sitting at a table and smiling for the cameras. Next up, history, area history. In 1926, in the largest city election ever, Urbana citizens chose to forbid movies in local theaters on Sundays. Church bells pealed in jubilation when the 2,427 to 1,939 vote was announced. Edgar Alger, manager of the Colonial Theater, vowed to bring a reworded referendum before the voters soon. Perhaps the hopes for the future were buoyed when he learned the pupils at Urbana High School are on his side. Last week, they voted 458 to 262 in favor of Sunday movies. That's from 1926. In 1976, a bill designed to abolish the state sales tax and replace it with an increase in the state income tax has been introduced in Springfield by State Representative Helen Satterwhite, a Democrat from Urbana. Under Satterwhite's proposal, the state sales tax would be reduced from the current 5% rate to 2% in 1977, and it would be eliminated in 1978. In 2011, Champaign-Urbana Public Health District Administrator Julie Pride said people continue to live at the Cherry Orchard Apartments located between Thomasboro and Rantoul 2 days after a judge ordered it closed for allowing the discharge of raw sewage into the environment. Caretakers Bernard and Eduardo Ramos filed a notice appealing the decision. On Wednesday, Pride talked to a woman with 3 children who continue to live at Cherry Orchard. Ramos told her that she did not have to move, Pride said. In international history, today's highlight, on April 21st, 2016, Prince, 57, one of the most inventive and influential musicians of modern times, was found dead at his home in suburban Minneapolis from an accidental fentanyl overdose. Also on this date, in 1836, an army of Texans led by Sam Houston, defeated the Mexican army, led by Antonio Lopez de Santa Anna, in the Battle of San Jacinto, the final battle of the Texas Revolution. The next headline reads, from University of Illinois, Springfield faculty reached tentative agreement to end strike. Classes resume as union calls for chancellor's resignation. This article is written by Ben Zielinski and is based out of Springfield. This is also an article from Capital News. You can reach out to them at news@capitalnewsillinois.com. Faculty at the University of Illinois Springfield ended a more than 2-week strike on Monday after reaching an agreement with university administrators overnight. Tenured and tenure-track faculty at UIS, one of the 3 University of Illinois system institutions, went on strike on April 3rd after failing to reach an agreement with UIS administrators over pay increases. The two parties came to an agreement after hours of negotiations on Sunday. Both sides declined to specify the terms of the agreement until after the UIS United Faculty Union could ratify the agreement in the coming days. Our bargaining team made the difficult decision to suspend the strike because we do not want our students to lose further instructional time as they head into final exams and graduation, Dathan Powell, the union president and UIS theater professor, said in a statement. It appeared the strike would start having more substantial impacts on students if it continued into another week. The university sent an email to students on Friday announcing it was prepared to implement a plan this week to help students complete the semester if the strike continued. The university said alternative plans would be made for students who were not able to complete their assignments because their professors were on strike. Not all classes at UIS were held up by the strike, however, as many professors are part of a different union. The union indicated their decision to end the strike was more about ensuring students can complete their classes than any victory in bargaining meetings. They claimed UIS Chancellor Janet Gooch intentionally prolonged the strike. "We cannot let her jeopardize their education and futures any longer, so we have decided to bring the administration's last offer to our membership for a vote," Powell said, calling on Gooch to resign her leadership role. UIS said in a brief statement that it looks forward to continuing to work together to fulfill its mission to provide a uniquely student-centered educational experience, both in and out of the classroom. A spokesperson for Gooch declined to comment. Gooch took over UIS in 2022. Both parties remained far apart on the size of salary increases as of Friday, according to the university's website. The union wanted a 2.6% increase in the current fiscal year and 6% over the next 2 years, costing $1.3 million. UIS offered three options for increases, two of which begin with 1% raises that could increase under the University of Illinois system's university salary program. They argued one-third of the union already makes six figures. That's one-third. The union also wanted to raise the minimum starting pay for their unit to $64,500 from $55,000, which UIS argued was not realistic given financial constraints on the university. The university offered to raise the minimum salary to $60,000. And there is a photograph of a man in a greenish shirt, glasses, Caucasian male, slightly balding, glasses, standing at a podium holding a microphone, and there's someone behind him with a sign that says "On Strike." The caption reads, "University of Illinois Springfield Faculty Union President Dathan Powell speaks at a news conference on the first day at the campus on April 3rd. That photo is taken by Jenna Schweikert for Capital News, Illinois. Now let's take a quick look at our weather forecast over the next few days. Today, 77 degrees, mostly sunny and breezy. Wednesday, the high will be 76, the low is 58, mostly sunny, southwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Thursday, the high will be 80, the low will be 56, and it will be mostly sunny. Friday, the high is 74, the low is 61. Showers, an 80% chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon. And by Friday, the high will be 70, the low will be 52, mostly sunny. As a quick note, this story, the stories I've read so far today, contain original reporting by News Gazette staff. If you are not a subscriber, please consider becoming one, because local journalism is only possible with your support. A subscription to the News Gazette plays a vital role in making this reporting possible. Thank you for your support and helping us continue to connect our community. And now, from Rob LeCates, that's Rob, and then L-E, separate word, Cates, C-A-T-E-S, his column, name dropping. Photographic Paragon retires after 35 years with the News Gazette. Robin, R-O-B-I-N, Scholes, S-C-H-O-L-Z. Robin Scholes may not resemble the Flash, besides the one atop her camera, but for the last 35 years, the News Gazette's photographic paragon has given Barry Allen a run for his money, being everywhere all at once. She has produced thousands of galleries and captured millions of images, and last Wednesday, Scholes bid adieu to the newsroom setting. She joked that her departure isn't exactly 35 years, but the two-week gap is minuscule because she did enough overtime to make up for it and count for 35. Before college, Scholes had zero interest in photography. She grew up in Arlington Heights and went to EIU, Eastern Illinois University, originally studying pre-veterinary medicine to take care of large animals. But science wasn't the fit for her. At a career day event, she connected with a journalism professor who convinced her to give writing a try, which didn't scratch that itch yet. So she tried photography, mainly because it was a required general education course, and she found where she belonged. The journalism coursework at Eastern is structured around involvement with student media outlets like the student-run newspaper. We all got our training working at the Daily Eastern News, Scholl said. That's where I learned everything, including the darkroom. She started photography in the film age, then transitioned to the digital age in the 1990s and 2000s. Scholl wasn't one to keep away from the chemicals when it came to image reproduction. There were ways to make prints better by using your fingers to make your whites come up if you rubbed it while it was in the developer, she said. The darkroom chemicals would result in silver stains on her clothes, but she found a solution to remove them. Unfortunately, that solution came with a carcinogenic side effect, a risk that led her away from developing. During college, she said some of the memorable pictures she took included the university's 1980 run at the NCAA Division II football title or when Rosalind Carter visited campus. She met Tom, her husband of more than 40 years at Eastern, where both went on to work as photojournalists after graduation. Her first job was with Lerner Newspapers in the Chicago region while waitressing for years. Then she was hired at the Waterloo Courier in Iowa. The newspaper, during a change in ownership, gutted the photo department, letting everyone go on a Friday, and then brought on Scholl the following Monday. It was a good-sized paper. A small town, but a good-sized paper to cover, she said. It was nice, and we enjoyed our time there. She stayed at the medium circulation paper for 4 years before working with her husband at a chain of papers along US 24 in central Illinois. After 3 years, she got the job at the News Gazette in the Danville office and eventually migrated to Champaign. She stayed with the News Gazette because she started her family in central Illinois, and it's a nice area, and I enjoy the people I work with, she said. It was comfortable, and I didn't have the desire to go to a bigger paper. Scholl looks to celebrate her retirement by keeping busy in her flower garden and preparing for her first grandbaby due in August. I'm satisfied with what I've done here, she said. Rob Lacates is a multimedia reporter at the News Gazette. You can reach him by phone or email. His phone number is 217-393-8262. That's 217-393-8262. Or his email address, RLECATES@newsgazette.com. And there's a few photographs that accompany this article. One is a photo of Robin Scholl as she holds up a camera. She's a Caucasian woman, graying hair to her shoulders. The caption reads, Robin Scholl retired from the News Gazette on Wednesday after 35 years with the newspaper. And the one other image is of hands holding a black and white photograph on gray cardboard. And the image is of a clothing line with clothes just on it outside with a panda hanging from it as well. This is the image Robin Scholl said got her the job at the News Gazette in 1991. And that's provided, that photo is provided by Rob Lacates for the News Gazette. So it's clothes hanging on a clothesline and drying a stuffed panda, obviously for a child who lived in that home. Great photo. And thank you to Robin Scholl for all of her years working for the News Gazette. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, April 21st, 2026. I'll be back to read part two of today's paper with you shortly, so please stay with me. Thank you for listening. It's always a pleasure to read with you. Thanks for listening. I hope you have a great week ahead and a wonderful day.